Welcome to the Learning to Mom podcast, Mom Friends. My name is Layla, and I inform first-time moms on pregnancy and birth so that they can be empowered and educated without feeling overwhelmed. I was one of the first of my friends to experience pregnancy, so I kind of had to figure out a lot of it on my own. So if that's you, then don't worry. Allow me to be your friend and give you the resource in your pregnancy that I wish I could have had in mine. Here you can get the answers to all your gazillion first-time mom questions without being judged, overwhelmed, or belittled. So if that sounds good to you, then let's get into it. I know you can tell by the episode title. I've been holding this in for a while, but I'm so excited to finally announce that we are pregnant with number two. It feels so good to let you know that, and I'm so freaking excited to get to be pregnant alongside of you. Talk about mom friends. Let's go. I'm actually like fairly far along. Most people probably would have announced their pregnancy by now, to be honest. And I don't want to give away just how far along I am because I don't want people to know when I'm due, but I am pregnant. That's for sure. We actually have really enjoyed getting to keep the secret for as long as we have. It was just really nice to like not share that with the world, even on our private social media pages. It was just so nice to have something that was just known by Matthew and I and then our immediate families. But I am definitely at a point where if you see me in public, you can see that I have a baby in my belly. So it was time to share. Plus, it's so much easier now for me to like talk on Instagram stories and really share all that I'm doing and how I'm feeling, because up until now, I wasn't sharing a big, huge part of my life that was impacting my daily life. I feel like I was keeping a secret from you, and every time we connected, I just wanted to be like, I'm pregnant too, I'm pregnant too. So, wow, it feels so good that you know. But today's episode is going to be a shorter one. You don't need to hear me babble on for 40 minutes all about myself, but I will be sharing how we found out we were pregnant, what I'm doing differently in this pregnancy, how this pregnancy has been different than the first, and what I'm planning on doing differently when it comes to labor and delivery. So first things first, the fun story, how we found out that we were pregnant. So first, not wanting to overshare or talk your ear off, but to give some backstory, we were not trying to conceive, but I will say we were not doing anything to prevent it either. So Matthew and I do what's called NFP, stands for natural family planning. I'm sure you've seen influencers start talking about natural cycles and stuff, but that's essentially what we do. Just being transparent, we're practicing Catholics, which I've talked about before, but we don't use contraception. What we do is use God's given fertility tracking system, aka my God given menstrual cycle, right? Like, we all know men are fertile 100% of the time, women are only fertile during ovulation, but we don't use any man-made form of contraception that would prevent conception. So no condoms, birth control, IUD, yada, 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 you get the gist. But what we do is when we are wanting to conceive, we have sex during ovulation because that's the only time we can get pregnant out of the month. And when we don't want to conceive, we don't have sex during that period out of the month. This is God's design. I could go on and on about how awesome it is truly, not just for health reasons that I'm not on anything, but also just how beautiful it is for marriage when you're trusting the Lord completely and not using anything between the two of you during your most intimate moments. I don't need to go on. My mother may be listening. But the thing about NFP and tracking your fertile window is that you actually have to know what you're doing and you actually have to track it. NFP, I think, can get a really bad rep because people confuse it with just like, oh, tracking your period. And that does not tell you when you're going to ovulate. It might give you an idea, but it's not going to be able to pinpoint the exact
time, or even get it correct if you're just like tracking your period. I think it also just gets a bad rep because people don't know how to do it correctly. Well, the thing about me is that I know how to do it correctly, but I got lazy. And essentially, I just stopped literally tracking it for like 3 months. Absolutely no excuses, like completely on me. We use my basal temperature to know when I'm ovulating. And I literally just, like, in all honesty, stopped wearing my armband. And Matthew knew this. Like, it's not like I was keeping this secret from him, right? That is not something that you hide from your spouse. I just kind of got lazy and he was just like, okay. So there's different ways of tracking your ovulation. We use the basal temperature way, and I sleep in an armband at night that just automatically syncs up to their app. You can also track your basal temperature by manually doing it, but it's, in my opinion, it is so much more work, and you have to be super consistent with what time you wake up, and you have to take it at the exact same time and every day and all that stuff. And that's just like not feasible for me when some days Milo wakes up at, you know, 3 a.m. and is awake for 2 hours, or some days she wakes up at 5 and is ready to go. Another day she sleeps until 8, you know, like, and then her schedule kind of dictates my schedule in the morning. So that just like wasn't feasible. So I have been doing this armband now, and I really, really like it. I do really like it. And I'm just acknowledging that I know it does sound very ironic because then I just stopped wearing it. But I really do think that is the best way. I linked it below because it's significantly cheaper than using an Oura ring that syncs up to Natural Cycles app. I feel like that's what just a lot of people know, like, oh, I want to do the temperature method. The Oura ring does this. I'm going to do that. They don't even know about this armband thing. But it's way cheaper. Like, the armband alone is $160 and you can get the free app. Whereas the tracking your temperature using the Oura ring is, let's see, the rings are closer to like $300 to $500. And then the app is $15 a month. So it's a lot. And granted, the Oura ring like gives you a lot more information, but if you're just using it to track your temperature, then the armband is the way to go. So keep this in mind if you're trying to conceive, because it's a great way to be able to pinpoint when you're ovulating so that you can have effective sex. or keep this in mind in postpartum, is like if postpartum is coming upon you soon and you don't want to be on birth control or anything, then you need to get this armband. You literally just sleep in it. And obviously, I know, and I've talked about it before, I do love it, but I just got lazy and I have no other reason. So we were not trying to conceive, but we also weren't trying to prevent it. So we kind of ended up with surprise round 2, baby, but we really could not be more excited. Okay, real quick, I gotta talk to you about something that's been making my mom life a whole lot easier. My Little Songbird. You know those moments when you find something that just clicks and you're like, yes, this is it. Well, that's how I feel about these guys. Their Montessori-inspired toys and furniture are seriously next level. I'm talking wood play gems that keep my little one entertained for hours, and don't even get me started on their silicone teethers. They are lifesavers, let me tell you. But here's the kicker. They are not just like incredibly well made and really awesome products. They've also done an incredible job making the products very aesthetic, all about creating spaces that feel warm, inviting, and really creative. So it's just like this magical touch that doesn't ruin your living room or your playroom or the nursery or whatever vibe you have going on in the space. And I will just want to say that their customer service, A+. They're like that friend who's always got your back, except they're also really good at making beautiful, fun things for your kids. Oh, and speaking of friends, My Little Songbird wanted to hook you up with a little something something. Use code LEARNINGTOMOM and then the numbers 15 for 15% off. That's LEARNINGTOMOM15. Learning to Mom being like one word, all caps.
That's not an affiliate link, but that does help show that you heard about it from the show, and it helps you get an incredible deal at the end of the day. So if you're ready to upgrade your mom game, or dad game, or auntie game, you get the idea, head over to mylittlesongbird.com and use Learning to Mom 15. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. As always, the link is in the episode show notes for your convenience. So, back to the story, how we found out. One day, I turned to Matthew and I said, "Shouldn't I have started my period by now?" And he said, "I can't remember. When did you have it last?" And then we did the math. And I have really long cycles anyway. So we did the math and then I was like, okay, no, we're good. Should be starting soon, but we're definitely not late. But I'm going to go take a pregnancy test just so that I don't have to worry about it. I know it's going to be negative. I just want to be able to kind of like rule that possibility out. So Matthew, also fully convinced that my period will be starting in a day or two, right on normal schedule, sits down on the couch. He's playing with Mila. I go to the bathroom to go take a pregnancy test. And about 5 minutes later, I emerge from the bathroom. I am not looking cute. We have no cute video of my reaction. We don't have a cute reaction of me telling Matthew. My hair is unbrushed. I'm still in my pajamas. I'm probably not wearing a bra. I don't even think I've washed my teeth or brushed my teeth yet. But I emerge from the bathroom and I just yell, "It's positive!" And then, I mean, we're both just shocked. Cannot believe it. We stare at it in disbelief and we just crack up in disbelief because it's so much to process. And you know, sometimes all you can do is just laugh out of shock and joy and all of the emotions that you're feeling. But we didn't even like believe it at this point. I still truly did not believe it because I really did not think that it was going to be positive. Like that first test, I was like, I know that positive pregnancy tests don't really happen. Like false positives aren't a thing, but this is not accurate. This is not right. So it wasn't until I took the second pregnancy test that evening and it was positive yet again that Matthew and I were like, okay, it's happening. And of course, you know, you never really feel like it's real or that it's set in until that first appointment. And that's really when things are like, okay, it's real. The pregnancy tests weren't lying. There's a baby. We're going to be a family of four. And we have just been so, so excited and just trusting in the Lord's timing for it all. Now, getting into some things that you're probably much more curious about instead of me just like babbling on about how we found out when everyone's story of how they find out is so great. So here are six things that have been different about this pregnancy compared to my first. One, I have been sick so much longer. Like I've just been so sick. It's been horrible. Also, I've just experienced nausea all day long. So with Mila, I was really only like sick the first thing in the morning and then like right before bed. So that was really great because during the day, I mean, sure that wasn't great, but like during the day, I was able to push through. Yes, I was exhausted and I had the other symptoms as well, but regarding just like throwing up in a toilet, I never had to worry about it. Whereas this pregnancy, I would throw up any time of the day. And if I wasn't throwing up, I was nauseous. And that is 100 times worse than just getting sick and throwing up. And now that I've had both experiences, I can say without a doubt, it is way worse if you're just nauseous all the time because you have no relief. So at least in Mila's pregnancy, I would just throw up. Like I would, you know, be sick for 2 minutes before I throw up, and then move on with my day. Whereas this, if I wasn't throwing up, I was just freaking nauseous. So, and then there's no relief. So it's way worse. Last time, the smell of chicken would make me want to throw up. And this time it is pretty much the smell of any meat at all being cooked, which was horrible timing for sweet Matthew because Matthew
listens to the Joe Rogan podcast, and I know that there are a lot of you whose husbands also listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, so he might have convinced some of your husbands to try this as well. But Matthew was listening to an episode, I think it was like a while ago, but he just convinced himself to do it. And it was about doing the carnivore diet, where you literally just eat meat for all of your meals. And he decided to do that. And prior to me like getting symptoms, it was fine, you know, because you find out you're pregnant and then you have a few weeks of like feeling good before the symptoms really hit. So he started it, I think, when we like found out we were pregnant, or maybe even before that. But then once those symptoms started, I was like, you can't do this. Like, I cannot breathe. I was having to go into our bedroom anytime he wanted to cook. And then I had to stuff pillows or a towel underneath the door so that the smell would not wander into my bedroom, because then I would throw up. So that did not, once I started doing that, he had to stop the carnivore diet, unfortunately for him. But that was really rough, because it was any smell of meat being cooked, could not handle it. Another thing that's been different with this pregnancy is that with Myla, the placenta, I'm going to get the words wrong. The placenta was in the front. So like in the front of the tummy, where, you know, where your hands touch your tummy. And I didn't start feeling movement until closer to 20 weeks. And this time I am not, well, the placenta is in the front. So with Myla, in order for me to feel external kicks, she had to kick through the placenta for me to feel it. So that's why it kind of takes a while if your placenta is in the front. But also, like, I wasn't feeling external kicks this early, but I was feeling movement. I could feel the baby moving at around 14 weeks, which was just significantly closer. I don't even know when I felt internal movement with Myla, but definitely not that early. Also, a big difference that I started experiencing heartburn in the first trimester. And that is not good, because I was experiencing heartburn really badly with Myla, but only in the, like, it didn't start until the third trimester. And I was really struggling, like, had to sleep sitting up multiple times. So I am terrified for it to get horrible, because if I've been experiencing heartburn since the first trimester, I am terrified for like the last weeks of pregnancy. How bad is it going to be? I don't know, but I'm scared. The last thing that's been different about this pregnancy compared to my first is last time I popped right at 17 weeks, like went to bed. It was during 17 weeks pregnant, but I don't think it was like the night of when I turned 17 weeks pregnant. But I do remember, went to bed, no bump. I woke up, visible bump, could not fit into my jeans. And we were in Hawaii, so I could only fit into one pair of pants that I brought. And granted, I was in a bathing suit, but people were asking me, like, and telling me congratulations. And it happened overnight. Whereas this one, it has not been like a night and day difference like that. It was much more gradual. And it probably started, like, I started probably showing around 15 weeks. Thank you, Natalie, for the review. If you want to be featured on a future episode, please leave a rating and review and tell me why you enjoy this podcast. But right now, step aside, it is Natalie's time to shine. She titled it, "So Worth It." Then she goes on to write, "I am planning on becoming a first-time mom, and I feel as though I have found a hidden gem of information. With no mom friends, I had no idea where to start. The Learning to Mom podcast is exactly what I needed. Layla really thought out everything, and I am just soaking this information up. She is answering so many questions I never even knew I had. I feel so prepared and ready to have my first baby, and yet there is so much more to come. Thank you, Layla." Whoa! Holy smokeroni, Natalie. That was so sweet. Thank you. That just means so much to me, because truly, I felt the same way about being the first. I just wanted to be able to create the resource for others that I didn't have while I was feeling alone. Like the things that I didn't know when I was going through it. So I genuinely appreciate your kind words. Now, please, if you're listening to this
and you haven't left a review, would you please take the time to leave a rating and review and let me know why you're enjoying the podcast? And you too can be featured on a future episode like Natalie. Okay, now moving on to the things that I'm doing the same in pregnancy. One, we are waiting to know the gender with this one as well. I genuinely love not knowing the gender. I know everyone has different personalities, and some people just want to know. But, I mean, it really doesn't matter. You're going to love the heck out of this baby, no matter if it's a boy or a girl. And I think waiting is fun. There are very few times in life where you can actually enjoy and experience a true surprise, and this is one of them. If you haven't heard me talk about why I think you should consider waiting to know the gender, here's the spark note slash cliff note version of my whole spiel. One, if this is your first and you're having a shower, not knowing the gender, or at least everyone else not knowing the gender, will actually help you so much. Because if people know the gender, they are not looking at your registry. They are getting you adorable pink tutus or cute little fire trucks. You will not be getting the diapers or the breastfeeding pillow or the changing pad, you name it. Like, truly, from one mom friend to another, if you want people to give you more things at your shower that you're actually going to need and use every day, then do not know the gender, or at least do not tell a soul. Another thing about this is that if you do get clothes, which you will, because people love buying baby clothes, they will at least be gender neutral, so you can always use them in the future on your future kids. You don't have to go out and buy a whole second wardrobe for your second kid if the second kid isn't the same gender as your first, because everyone gave you stuff that you could actually use for multiple kids. Win-win. Literally, it is the way to go. The second thing about why I personally love not knowing the gender, I consider myself to be a bit of a dreamer. I will visualize and dream up fake future scenarios so hard in my head that I become emotionally attached to them. And I know I'm not the only one who does this. I have talked to girlfriends. This is a thing. But I really loved not knowing the gender, so that I couldn't spend 9 months dreaming up a whole personality for a kid and getting attached to taking him to football practice and driving the four-wheeler around, or taking her to ballet class and then on Saturdays cute mom and daughter tea parties. I feel like not knowing the gender for me and my personality has allowed me to love Myla more fully for exactly who she is, and will continue to let me do that because I didn't have 9 months making her up in my head of what she's going to be like and what she's going to be interested in. But that is just me and my personality, but just like a word to the wise if you can resonate with that. I will say, for this pregnancy, I do have a very strong feeling that it's a boy. I think just because it's been like somewhat different than how I've been more sick, even though like midwives' tales or whatever is that you're more sick with girls, but I'm like, there's been a difference. It must be a boy. I'm so convinced that it is a boy that I will be shocked if it is a girl, because for some reason I'm just so convinced of it, even though we truly have no idea. And I also thought I was convinced that it was going to be a boy last time too. So, I mean, we're going to be so freaking excited regardless of the gender. So we'll see. Another thing that we are doing the same is we are keeping the no visitors in the hospital. And that includes Myla, which may just kill me because I'm going to miss her so much. Originally, we were planning on having her come to the hospital. But then the more that we really thought about it, to be quite honest, it's because I went on this, I served on this retreat a couple weeks ago now. So we really just made this decision a few weeks ago. And Myla really struggled being away from me. I mean, I struggled being away from her, but obviously from her little toddler perspective, it's really hard. And we just kind of thought through it and really came to the conclusion that we think it's going to be too difficult on her
to not be with us and then kind of be teased by seeing us for like 15 or 30 minutes and then like leaving again. To her little brain, she doesn't know like if I'm okay. She also sees everyone freaking out and taking so much care and consideration into this baby, and she's not with us. She might think she's been like replaced, and then she's just like whipped away from us again. So knowing her personality and just kind of what we experienced a few weeks ago, we just have decided that she won't be visiting us in the hospital. That's the plan right now. I mean, I guess that could change depending on growth. She's little and she changes so much every day. Also, like how I'm feeling, I think that would be emotionally really difficult for me to have her go through that while I'm emotionally and physically going through so much, that we just kind of think that it's a better idea to just wait until we're home with the baby and have her reunite us so that there's no like her being teased with our presence for 15, 30 minutes and then being like taken away from us again. Instead, you know, we can just be reunited and together and everyone's included right from the get-go. We're also planning on breastfeeding, still planning on having delayed cord clamping. We'll wait until we're home to give baby its first bath. And we're also going to really push still for immediate skin to skin and breastfeeding within the golden hour, which kind of depends on your hospital. But I think that for most hospitals now, that's like very common practice. But we're definitely going to be making sure that we're doing more skin to skin. We are also going to be doing more of it. We kind of just like were first time parents, didn't really know. I feel like looking back on it, we didn't do as much skin to skin as we could have. We just didn't know. We were like, okay, we did it for the first hour. Woohoo. That's it. And then obviously she was getting skin to skin whenever we breastfed, but it was still like, I don't know. I think we're like, I'm going to do it basically the entire time we're in the hospital and like when we get home. Whereas before it was just kind of, I only did that for the golden hour. So speaking of other things that I'm going to be changing up with this pregnancy and delivery, started off strong and really big. I actually changed hospitals. So obviously what comes with that is changing providers. And I also changed from an OBGYN to seeing the midwives. So that's really exciting. And I guess first, to give some insight into why I changed hospitals, I had a very decent experience at my previous hospital. Wasn't bad, it wasn't good, it was average. And then I had a friend who had a very traumatic birth experience at the hospital, and it was entirely like staff fault. And I basically heard her story, and this was before I was even pregnant, and I was like, I was kind of already teeter-tottering on not going back, and this just sealed the deal. And then the more that I actually hear about this hospital, the more that I hear kind of some horror stories about the care, so I'm really glad to not be going back there. I'm also switching just to like from OBGYN to midwives, just for a more like holistic perspective. I want a lot more autonomy in my birth, especially now because of this podcast and everything that I've learned. I just feel like that's really important to me. So I'm really, really excited to get to see that. I did think about having a birth center birth, but the one in Indy that would be like closest to us, that one only takes one type of insurance, and we don't have that. And then I didn't want to drive 2 hours to the one in Fort Wayne, who I had on this podcast, and I'm obsessed with them. And if they weren't 2 hours away, therefore a 4-hour round trip, and you have to go up for every single prenatal appointment. So what, 36 weeks or whenever you start doing weekly appointments, it was going to be a 4-hour round trip every week. If it wasn't that far, I would have totally been there. But listen to episode 13, Why You Should Give Birth at a Birth Center with Marianne Stroud from the Holy Family Birth Center. Another thing related to what I'm going to be doing differently is I'm going to be having a doula.
So excited for that. I'm very grateful for all of the amazing guests that I have on this podcast to kind of change my perspective on having a doula. And I cannot wait to have a doula present with my birth. I'm also working out a lot more and keeping fit with Fit Mama in 30, which I want to talk about because I think that you are going to like them. So let me just share kind of my whole spiel. First of all, these workouts are amazing. They are only 30 minutes long, hence the name Fit Mama in 30. It's created by two pre and postnatal training specialists that just like really freaking know their stuff. And you just sign up for them. You can either do the monthly membership or the annual, and I do the annual because it's cheaper. And then you just get access to their courses, and they have different courses. So you could like, you're paying the same amount, whether if you take the prenatal program or the postpartum program or whatever program, other programs they have. And so I bought the annual, and so I'm doing the prenatal course, which I really, really like because not only does it keep me fit, but it also prepares me for the physically demanding challenges that my body's going to be going through with labor and birth, and especially because I want a natural birth, it's like very physically demanding, so you have to make sure that your body is prepared for it. And then because I did the annual membership, once baby is here, I'll get to just easily transition into their postpartum course that I'm also very excited about because I've loved their prenatal course so much that I really think that I'm gonna like their postpartum course. Another thing about Fit Mama in 30 that I really like is that I just really struggled finding a workout program that was challenging enough. Not that I'm this super fit person, because like I'm really not. But I mean, I did play college soccer and like was involved in CrossFit for a little bit before Myla. And I just feel like a lot of the pregnancy workouts out there aren't challenging, or even like mom workouts aren't challenging enough. I don't get like a sweat in. I was just kind of like, this is a waste of time. I do not feel that way with them. I'm like really getting my money's worth. So I actually reached out to Carrie and Bailey for a code for you guys. And let me tell you, did they deliver? I have the biggest discount that they offer. Like, actually the biggest discount, because they told me that. So you're literally not going to find a greater discount for them. Use Learning to Mom, all caps, one word, for $20 off their annual membership. So their annual membership is already less expensive when you break it down per month than just getting the monthly membership. And I would recommend that you do the annual one, like regardless where you are in your pregnancy. Like if you're already in your third trimester and you want to sign up, then you'll just do like 3 months of the prenatal workouts and then you'll move into postpartum for the rest of the year, you know? So it's already cheaper than doing the monthly breakdown, but with the Learning to Mom discount on top of that, you save an additional $20, which is insane. So make sure you check that out. I have the link in the show notes below. But what else that I am doing differently this pregnancy is I'm actually not taking prenatals. I'm taking supplements instead. And I'm going to make another plug for going to go have your blood work done and then taking it to a specialist and actually presenting it to them and you just have it, you know, and then they be like, okay, this is what you need to be taking, because every one of us is unique and we're all going to be deficient in different stuff. So it's just like really great to have personalized care there. I'm also not sharing the due date publicly. I honestly learned that lesson with Myla. I think being overdue did not help because people were constantly texting me, asking me, coworkers emailing me. I mean, not close coworkers, but people at work, like, have you had the baby yet? Like, you will know when I have the baby. So I just don't want to deal with that. So I'm not sharing the due date publicly. Another thing that I'm doing differently is I will actually be taking a hypnobirthing course. I had Brianna on from the Heart and Womb Indie, and she was phenomenal. And I looked into the different birth courses. Like, there's different techniques. There's Lamaze and the Bradley Method. And I really only had hypnobirthing on, but I just felt like really connected to hypnobirthing. I feel like knowing my personality, that's the one that resonated with me the most. So I'm going to be taking a hypnobirthing course. I will also not be having an elective induction out of fear. So if you know my birth story with Myla,
I basically was just scared of having what I was just scared I was going to have a big baby. And that wasn't even because they told me I was going to have a big baby. It was just because Matthew was a very big baby and I was on the larger side. And I was like, if I wait any longer, I'm going to have a 10-pound, 11-pound baby. So I just was induced, and that was very dumb. 0 out of 10 recommend. I'm not against being induced again if it's medically necessary, but just like doing it because I was scared, I had some feeling that I was going to be, that my baby was going to be big, would not recommend. I will be advocating for a delay of wiping off the baby's vernix. So I remember at my last hospital, Milo was placed right on top of me. I didn't do any research. I wasn't prepared to advocate. And immediately the nurses take a towel and wipe your baby off of the vernix, which is like the coating that they were in the womb. And I'm not going to be allowing that this time. So that's fun. I will also be looking so much further into the vaccines that they give the baby at the hospital, which I have an episode actually this season coming out regarding just what they are and like what they kind of are for. So that way you can go and educate yourself and inform yourself on if you want that or not, because I think I was really blindsided getting to the hospital. I mean, again, this whole podcast is so that you have the resources that I didn't, because I went to the hospital and I like didn't even know the vaccines that they were going to give the baby. And then they just kind of like ask, and you just deliver the baby because it happens so fast, and you don't have the bandwidth to make an informed decision in that moment. Oh, everyone else is okay. Yeah, sure. Fine. That's fine. Like, you know, so, I'm doing like the actual research into it to make that decision. My goal for this episode, lastly, was that I actually wanted to share my birth plan. Like, my original podcast episode title was my birth plan for number 2. But honestly, I haven't gotten around to it. I do know what I want. So, like, I want an unmedicated birth. I want to labor in the tub for as long as possible. I want to try to stay as active as possible during labor. I want intermittent monitoring. I don't want an IV unless absolutely necessary. Like, that's the kind of vibe. But there is so much more that you need to plan and look into when you're writing your birth plan, because you don't just include on your birth plan what you want, but you also have to include all of the possible what ifs. Like, worst case scenario, what do you want? Like, if it comes down to it, would I want forceps or a vacuum? That kind of thing. If you're wondering what framework I'm going to be using to write my birth plan, then go listen to episode 19, How to Create a Great Birth Plan with Birth Doula Lindsay. That is quite literally the exact framework that I'm going to follow. That's it. Now you know all the details. You basically know what I know about my pregnancy and birth. I mean, I'm definitely still keeping some things to myself, like the due date, but that's it. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Learning to Mom podcast. At the beginning, I was like, you don't need to hear me talk for 40 minutes. Well, it was 37 minutes. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Thank you so, so much for your kind words and encouragement, just excitement for me. We are really thrilled. And again, I am so excited to get to walk alongside of you now in your pregnancy, as I'm pregnant too. If you haven't yet, please leave a rating and review wherever you're listening to podcasts at, and please tell me why you're enjoying listening to this podcast. I will catch you here next week.